CNBC's Big January continues with the JPM Healthcare Conference, the Amex Golf Tournament, Inauguration Day, and the World Economic Forum in Davos. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Seth, the doctor's name on Twitter who gave a long, long narration here of what Tank Dell is in for. His name is Jesse Morse, MD. Is that the person you're thinking of?
Yeah, he's annoyed me for some reason. I don't remember why, but yeah. But he is an actual doctor.
Did he annoy you because he's a board-certified family and sports medicine physician?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that we weren't allowed to be annoyed by doctors.
Regenerative medicine stem cell expert?
Mm.
Probably dropping some of that stem cell
I don't remember
knowledge.
What annoyed me, but I muted him for some reason.
He's a fantasy doc. He's the owner of At Injury Experts and At All Natural Supps.
Okay.
So I'm guessing that's supplements.
So what's he say? Yeah, he is an actual doctor.
Yeah, he's an actual doctor with 114,000 Twitter followers. He says this, Tank Dell injury update. And this is an update we'd heard from other people. He tore his left ACL, MCL, LCL, and meniscus. Hitting for the unfortunate cycle right
well,
now.
Well, he's not reporting that, but you're going to tell us what.
No, others reported it.
He's
laying this out. Yeah, he's taking from other people's reports. He said this will take multiple surgeries, with the first likely repairing the MCL and the LCL. Then, after 6 to 8 weeks, depending on the stability of the knee, the ACL will be reconstructed. It is unclear if the MPFL, that's what holds the patella in place, was torn. It is also unclear as to the severity of the damage to the meniscus and whether it will be trimmed or has to be repaired. And I don't know if that really matters with Tank. Sometimes guys tear meniscuses, menisci, during the season. And one of the trimming gets you back on the field a little quicker, but it's a little
It all depends
more
on where the meniscus tear is, if it goes into the joint and everything. So it's just,
Tank's in for the long haul anyways.
Yeah, so like if you have to repair the meniscus, it's a longer recovery.
It's a longer recovery, but Tank's going to be out for a while.
Yeah.
The closest most recent comparison to this is Nick Chubb. But Dell's injury was worse than Chubb. We should remind people, Nick Chubb got hurt last year. He did get back on the field this season.
Does he say why it's worse than Nick Chubb's?
He just says, but Dell's was worse than Chubb's. This injury was similar to Napoleon McCallum. Oh, boy. Do you remember that one? The running back for the Raiders?
I remember that there was a Napoleon that had... Oh, yes.
It
I do remember
bent.
That. Yep.
His got bent.
Yeah.
He got hit in the front.
Yeah.
And the knee bent backwards, noticeably. That was a really bad injury, he says. This is the worst part. All the other stuff is just the prelude to, this is definitely career-threatening, possibly career-ending. Returning in 2025 is a tall task. While we don't have any specifics, I think there's a good chance Dell's surgery will be performed by Dr. Dan Cooper, who's one of the top knee surgeons in the world. He's the team doctor for the Dallas Cowboys. Oh, can we trust the Cowboys team doctor? He did take a Hippocratic oath. Can we trust the doctor for the Cowboys to do a good job on a Houston Texan?
Yeah, I guess so. They have the same sports psychologist that works for the Yankees and recommended that they should look to the...
Watch the sweep.
Watch the Red Sox come back and
2004.
And beat the Yankees as evidence that it can be done.
When they were trailing the Astros by a 3-0 margin.
That's right.
Yeah. That was not a good recommendation. That did not work out. Mm-hmm. Yankees got swept. So anyways, I say all this to say, God bless Tank Dell. I hope this all works out.
Yeah, that was a tough one, man. It was really, really tough. It was ugly and it's awful for Tank Dell. I guess you go into next season, you certainly can't expect that Tank Dell's going to be available.
You
got to
plan as Tank Dell's not going to be here.
You got to look at this like a pitcher that just got a Tommy John surgery on the last game of the season. Like, okay, we don't know when he's going to come back, but don't hold your breath.
If you, and maybe multiple of these things happen, if you had to choose one, trade for Garrett Wilson,
mm-hmm.
bring Stephon Diggs back,
mm-hmm.
draft a receiver with a first or second round pick.
Draft a receiver.
You would?
Yeah. I think the thing is, and I know a lot of people are saying you need an interior offensive lineman. There are plenty upon plenty of good NFL teams that are not chock full of first round offensive linemen.
Yeah.
Like almost all of them. Almost all the good offensive lines don't have five first rounders across the board. You know, ideally, you've actually got at least one late round draft pick or a free agent sprinkled in there who's just a certified badass. It's that there's more to it than just that. They got to fix the entire offensive operation, including the way the offensive line coach and the offensive coordinator are operating. You know, whether that means new ones or whatever it is, it's not just a personnel issue. So I would rather, because likewise, bringing Garrett Wilson in is not a salve for all of the things that kept the Texans from being good offensively when they had Tank Dell and Stephon Diggs.
No,
they weren't a good offense at any point this season.
In fact, I feel like it would feed the beast that may have consumed the Texans this offseason, which is, ooh, shiny new toys.
I mean, we're at a point where we're multiple games into the season, and the Texans were winning games, but the Bobby Slowick was like Mel Kiper acting like, oh my gosh, cover two. Whatever do I do against cover two?
They have to ban it.
You run the ball. Like, it's simple. It's so simple.
Yeah.
All of us old heads out there, we're looking around wondering, like, wait a second. Why are people so confused about what you do versus cover two? Yeah. It's so easy to run versus cover two if you actually know what you're doing.
Yep.
And the Texans did not know what they were doing.
They did not. They did not at all. People still weighing in on the text page. Our number one wide receiver is injury prone. Our other top three receiver is a little guy. It's also injury prone or just had catastrophic injuries constantly every year, talking about Tank, or at least these first 2 years. And the third receiver had a non-contact older guy issue. We need all new receivers, all new O-line,
all new.
Two more defensive backs that can cover. We need linebackers that are better or not injury prone. Blank. We're at a rebuild.
Okay, so no.
Bleep, I should say. Not
rebuild. Rebuild's crazy. For one, especially in the NFL, like it's just the concept of what a rebuild is anymore. It's dicey.
You've got a lot of guys in a lot.
Look,
of spots.
CJ, there's not a quarterback in the draft or elsewhere that I would rather have right now still than CJ because the ceiling is still very, very high. He's still done some very good things this year. It's just the bad things have been too bad. Yes, all those things would be great, but you do have to look at and be realistic about it. When you look around the NFL and you watch some of the offenses that are operating at a much higher level than the Texans, they don't have talent that's any better than what the Texans have on paper. So it's very much the entirety of the offense, including the coaching right now, that's not getting the job done. So there is no magical mixture of players that's gonna change that. You talk about, okay, you need defensive backs who can cover. They're just fine with their actual starting cornerbacks. It's the guys in the depth, you know, and it's like, slot corners. I know a lot of people want Kamari Lassiter to play slot. This is the problem. I think Kamari Lassiter would be great at slot corner. It's a lot easier to find a confident slot corner than it is to find a guy who can play on the outside.
Kamari's shown he can play at a high level for a rookie on the outside right now.
Yeah, some of the way they operate defensively is like you can't rely on Jalen Petrie or Jimmy Ward to be a guy that's one-on-one at the line of scrimmage with Devontae Adams or Garrett Wilson, ironically enough.
Yep.
But that speaks more to depth at cornerback. Then certainly not your starting. And what were the other positions he mentioned on defense?
Oh, boy, he listed almost all. He said we need linebackers that are better.
The linebackers will be, well, with Azeez Alshire, I feel good about him. The Christian Harris and what is he right this moment? And like he's definitely running with a hitch in his giddy up yesterday. I feel good about the linebacking core. Those are young guys that I feel are swarm, and I feel they're the right kind of guys. The trouble on offense is that I'm not sure that a lot of your highest paid guys on offense are the type of mentality that you want moving forward. I don't know if Dalton Schultz, the way Laremy Tunsil operates, great. He's great in pass protection. The problem with this team has not been the left tackle pass protection. It's been the downs on first and second down where you can't run the ball to save your life, even when it should be easy to run the ball. Screens. Yeah. The cure for screens cannot be never call screens again.
Right.
That's not the cure for screens.
No, you got to get better at it.
They've got to be better at coaching it up and getting guys to execute screens.
Yep.
But it's not a talent issue there. That's the thing that speaks to me more so with Bobby Slowick about, man, you guys can't run screens to save your life. None of the guys out there look like they even, it looks like they're making decisions about who do they block after the ball is caught on a screen.
Yeah.
The timing is way off. It's really bad. The execution on the screens goes back to the offensive coordinator. I've told you, when the 49ers are really rolling, what I love about it, like these past few years before this season, was it's artistry on their screens. The offensive linemen are all set up waiting for the ball to come out of the quarterback's hands. They're waiting at the 1 yard line, and then they pounce on the defensive or offensive linemen trucking safeties and cornerbacks and everybody down the field. You get none of that with the Texans, partly because nobody looks like they know who they're supposed to block.
No.
Which is bad.
No,
that's bad on any level of football.
Your four highest paid guys on offense are Laremy Tunsil, in order.
Yeah.
Laremy Tunsil, Nico Collins,
mm-hmm.
Titus Howard, Dalton Schultz.
Yeah.
Three of those four guys kind of just
out there
floating
just,
like a feather on a breeze.
Yeah,
out there.
All right. Hey, how's my PFF pass protection grade? Cool.
Right,
all
right. Right, right.
Yeah, it's not it, man.
Nope.
It's just not it. And it's tough because I'd like to have any one of them on my football team. I don't want those to be the leaders of the young guys on offense.
Right.
And I know they gush about. There's one thing where I think it still gets me that in the broadcast against the Chiefs, they said that CJ said that Dalton Schultz is a tight end you would build in a lab. And I'm just wondering, like, what is CJ's perception of the NFL?
What's his perception of a lab?
What's his? And I know he watches a lot of football.
Yeah.
Well, more so than a lot of young players these days. Like, I mean, like he knows George Kittle. He's watched Travis Kelce in his prime. Like he's seen these guys. Dalton Schultz is not those guys. I don't understand exactly where that comes from.
You know, back before the days of video games.
Yeah.
You know, when I was a kid, one of the things that people liked to get was like your parents would give you like a chemistry set.
Yeah.
You know, they give you all the different potions and vials and the test tubes and everything else. And that was a gift that always lasted like one day for me because I sucked at doing chemistry. I was a horrible laboratorist.
I'll tell you. I
was horrible
in
a lab.
I'll make it even simpler. How about a Lego set?
Lego set.
How many X-Wing fighters did you successfully complete with your brand new Lego set?
There is not a good X-Wing laboratory at all.
You had some. Somehow you got three wings on that thing when there's supposed to be four.
That's the Dalton Schultz laboratory. Sean Pendergast Christmas gift laboratory, man. I like this new version of John Gruden. John Gruden, with Barstool now, starting to do things where I'm feeling like, I don't think he cares to get back into coaching
He's just
anymore.
Letting it all hang out. He's like an old man when he starts wearing fuchsia pants. What do I care? I'm going to brunch.
We
got to
check, yeah.
Yeah.
I know he's married, but he might have a young girlfriend.
I'm going to make inappropriate comments. I don't give a damn.
Here was John Gruden on TikTok doing a Jacksonville Jaguars version of the night before Christmas, and it felt very strange. I'm like, this is a very odd team for him to just go ahead and pick on. He's picking on the Jacksonville Jaguars here. Gruden.
So, hey, Duval, good morning. This is John Gruden, and I got a poem to read to you. 'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through Duval, the fans sat in silence, no cheering at all. On his yacht Kismet, Shad paced the deck. His team was adrift, his patience a wreck. While Trevor stood ready, so young and so bright, the staff held him back. This just wasn't right. The fans roared with hope. Clowns' noses retired as Trent and Doug had finally been fired. Prisco stood stunned, his whining now done. As Baselli proclaimed, Duval's time has begun. His eyes growing weary, his back getting tight, Shad whispered to Jax, it's time to unite. Merry Christmas to all, and to Duval, good night.
Wow, he went full Grinch.
Went
full Grinch.
Well, he went deep, too, because he had Pete Prisco mentioned in there.
Was it the name of Shad? He kept saying Shad. That's how I knew it wasn't AI. He was calling him Shad instead of Shad Khan.
That's funny. The staff held him back. That's a former coach on current coach violence right
there. Yeah, so if Gruden, like, that would be a team that
Gruden might think
I got a shot at getting a job there, maybe. Who knows? But he's calling out, he's ridiculing the owner on Christmas Eve.
Coach.
Mm-hmm.
The GM talked about clown noses being retired. I think there was a T-shirt.
Oh, probably.
That had Balky with a clown nose on it. Their GM. Yeah.
Did he go after Shad Khan's son at all, Tony?
No, Khan? No. And that would have been low hanging.
Wait, is that his name?
Tony.
Tony.
Yeah. Tony Khan. Yeah.
Who's the name of the writer from the Aggie writer?
Sam.
Sam Khan. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah. Okay, Sam Khan.
Yeah, that's
a quiz game I didn't know I would play today. Aim your cons.
Yeah. What about the one from Star Trek? His name was just Khan?
I think he was just Khan. Okay. Yeah. A trick question. He has no first name. It is his first name. So,
I tried to get myself in the Christmas spirit yesterday. I kind of be like, hey, Seth, be a kinder, gentler version of yourself. Texans took care of that.
Blame the Texans.
Texans took care of that.
Yeah, did they ever?
The only way it worked was that I had a Christmas dinner to go to, so I didn't really have time to just... To blast
were you,
off
were
last
you
night.
Pleasant at the Christmas dinner?
Oh, yeah. I was very pleasant there.
Okay.
The children do that to you. You know? You don't want to be like, I didn't want to go full Seth in front of a group of school-age children.
We'll save that for the show when they're all driving to school.
Not today.
No, not today.
They're fast asleep in their...
Or playing with their gifts or whatever. Yeah, they're doing something.
Fast asleep in their nightgowns and caps.
Yes.
Whatever they do in Christmas.
Whatever
carols.
Gruden just said. Yeah. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Reaction Thursday here. Texans lose yesterday 31-2. There's been a steady progression over the last couple of months where the Texans just don't look like they're going to be a playoff team. They don't look like a playoff team. There is one guy out there who had a very Merry Christmas. And I'm talking about, when I say a guy out there, I'm talking about one of those kind of standard generic people that assess the NFL.
Oh,
this guy had a very Merry Christmas yesterday. We'll tell you who he is next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, one guy out there who had a very, very Merry Christmas. I'm not talking about Lamar Jackson or Derrick Henry or Mahomes or Travis Kelce, anybody associated with those winning teams. And it's not even a guy with a specific name. It is a generic amalgam of several guys who hold a belief that you cannot hire a defensive head coach.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot hire, in this day and age, when you got a young quarterback especially, you must hire a head coach with a background on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
It was a Merry Christmas for that particular guy because... of how the Texans look, because of how the Texans looked yesterday, which has been a progression of how they've looked all year. And I don't subscribe to that. I think DeMeco Ryans is a good coach, and I think he's got the potential to be a very good head coach and can win a Super Bowl someday. However, the full delegation of the offensive side of the ball to Bobby Slowik has been a failure this year. Some of the press conferences, he says things, DeMeco does, that seem more defensive coordinator-ish than head coach-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a big offseason for him, man. I said back during the, it was during that three-week period where they were just getting destroyed up front. That set week 7, 8, 9 where it was like, okay, man, somebody's getting fired over this if this holds up, whether it's Chris Strauser or Bobby Slowik or somebody. Can DeMeco Ryans be a wartime consigliere, to use a Godfather term? Can he? He's an awesome, awesome coach when things were going well last year and you're in a honeymoon period. And I think there's certain facets he's done a good job with. The defense has been really good this year, and I think that's largely due to DeMeco Ryans' coaching.
Yeah.
But he is going to have some – if this holds up, and there's no reason to believe that it won't, the way the offense – I don't think the offense is going to figure it out in a Week 18 – game against the Titans and in the playoffs, especially if they have to go on the road. He's going to have some big decisions to make, man. Some huge decisions to make. And we will find out if DeMeco Ryans, you've said it many times, you don't really become a head coach till you got to start firing your friends.
Right, yeah. Well, let me hear this audio because I don't know it.
There's no audio here.
It's I thought you had the guy that was railing off about it. Oh, okay.
No.
Okay, this is the problem with that philosophy. If you look at the top scoring teams in the NFL right now, and not to mention perhaps the quarterbacks who have performed the best, these are the top three scoring teams in the NFL. The Detroit Lions, the Buffalo Bills, the Baltimore Ravens. The Detroit Lions have a guy who played tight end in the NFL, and it was a tight ends coach, Dan Campbell, but he's not an offensive-minded
head coach.
Not a
QB guru.
He's a culture coach.
Yeah, for
sure. You hired a really good offensive coordinator.
Yes.
Elevate had to fire an offensive coordinator to get to Ben Johnson there, but they've got a really good offense. The Buffalo Bills, Josh Allen, is he doing okay? I haven't checked
yeah,
in on
no,
him.
He is. Is, yeah, no, yeah. He is. Okay, so I checked during the break.
They've
He's
got
doing
a defensive-minded
good.
Head coach. The Baltimore Ravens, John Harbaugh, special teams coach and coordinator. There's not really any evidence right now that you can't develop or win or have a good quarterback with a defensive-minded or special teams-minded head coach or a guy that – I played for Tom Coughlin. Coughlin, I think, was people considered an offensive head coach because he was a, you know, he was a wide receivers coach with the Giants and everything. But he was never, and I like having played for him, he was never the offensive coordinator. I think he called plays for a very brief time in a bad season once. But like he wasn't an offensive minded head coach. He was a culture guy in a lot of ways, who just turned the screws on everybody. There's just too much evidence of, and then Bill Belichick. It almost feels unfair even bringing Bill Belichick into it, but like there's just plenty of evidence that you don't have to be an offensive minded head coach to have a good quarterback.
The three coaches you brought up are the perfect ones to make my point, though.
Yeah.
And here's why. And you touched on it a little bit. Dan Campbell, first time head coach, had to pivot and shift gears. He did it in the middle of a season, giving Ben Johnson play calling duties. Had to make a tough decision, made a good decision. John Harbaugh, he'd been a head coach a little while longer when Greg Roman was the offensive coordinator. But as you pointed out several times today, maybe wait a little too long to pull the trigger on firing Greg Roman. Made a good hire. Found Todd Monken, and Todd Monken has been fantastic, like Ben Johnson has been. Sean McDermott made one of the toughest decisions you have to make, which is you had a mercurial wide receiver there who's leading the league in receiving. You had Josh Allen as your quarterback there. But the team is 6-6 or whatever they were, 5-5, and he fires the offensive coordinator for an offense that statistically was doing pretty well, but situationally was not very good, and there was obviously maybe something going on behind the scenes. Promotes Joe Brady, and now this is what they are. You know, you're talking about quarterback. You're talking about the top three MVP candidates are the quarterbacks for those teams, and they've changed coordinators in the last few years. That's the decision that's facing D'Amico Ryan. C.J. Stroud has the same sort of potential as these guys do. He was a second overall pick in the draft. Is D'Amico Ryan's as good an eye for talent and as good a recognizer that I got to do something about this as those three guys?
The other, and then I wasn't going to bring this team into it because we're coming off the heels of having the offensive rookie of the year, but the fourth leading scorer in the NFL right now, the Dan Quinn-led Washington Commanders. So it's 1 year and we'll see, but it's very promising right now.
Sure.
So you want to see a track record of this. But Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson have been operating with non-offensive-minded head coaches. The problem is that I think people fall in love with the idea of like, oh, yeah, you're going to have Andy Reid, and then you'll have an offense that's awesome forever, blah, 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 blah. Ultimately, at the end of the day, it's how good of a head coach are they. And the job of being a coordinator and the job of being a head coach are so dissimilar. Like there's so much that goes into it above and beyond whether or not you're an offensive mind or a defensive mind that it's a nice dream. It's kind of like the dream of communism, though. It's like, hey, you know, that's why it's hard with the young sometimes to explain to them why communism can be so devastating or like because the dream of communism is a beautiful one. It's like it's like heaven on earth.
We're all equals.
Right. It falls apart when you try to execute it in reality because it's not the way humans operate.
Yeah.
But the dream is a nice sell.
It is.
So the dream of like, oh, we're just going to hire an offensive coordinator and then we'll have the best offense in the league for the next 15 years. It's a beautiful dream.
It is.
But in the reality of it, it's a lot harder than that. Yeah. And that a lot of the guys who are great offensive or defensive coordinators, some of the things that make them really good coordinators are the things that prevent them from being genuinely 100%. Good head coaches.
100%.
So it makes sense logically, but it's just way harder to and it's not the easy button that I think people want it to be.
No, but if you're going to hire a defensive head coach, he better have a good eye for talent in the coaching ranks,
and he better make the right decisions with his coordinators. So
if he's made a bad decision, flush it and go make a good one.
Yeah,
you know.
So I mean, that's the test for D'Amico this year is. And I would say this, because you don't know what goes on behind closed doors. You don't know what challenges maybe Bobby Slowick is having, maybe from personnel, maybe from CJ, like in terms of just what he can and can't do. I don't know. We don't know for sure. This is currently not working, and it's a flaming disaster. It's not just not working. It's a flaming disaster. They've been an atrocious offense for the second half of the season that – you've got to make a change of some sort systemically or with a coordinator. If there's any amount of personal loyalty to Bobby Slowick, if that's the thing that would prevent D'Amico from making a change, D'Amico has to consider, am I even really helping out Bobby Slowick here if we try to drag this out one more year? If we wait on Bobby? Right.
Yeah.
I mean, there's lots of guys who have been fired. Mike McCarthy got hired. He got hired from the Green Bay job after a year where he was like the worst offensive coordinator in the league. But that was a one-year, one-off occurrence.
Yeah.
Sean Payton lost his play-calling duties early in his career. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't like it had gotten to the point where he was blamed for the entirety of all the issues. So there's...
It might be a situation where
if you want to do right by your friend, man, yeah, let him hit the reset button a little bit here, because it might just be that he's not ready for it yet.
Yep. Larry didn't call the post-game show yesterday, I'm assuming because he needed a 12-hour cooling-off period. What's going on, Larry? Larry and Stafford, what's up?
Merry Christmas, belated Merry Christmas to you and Seth, man. I didn't get a chance to hit y'all beforehand, and
Thank you.
Hope y'all had a great day. I want to get the positives out the way, because you're right, I needed probably more than 12 hours. But the positive is that I came down to the lower level and watched Beyonce, and damn, she is fine, man. Lord. But that was a great performance by her, man, and I'm glad that it happened yesterday for her and for the city. Now, getting all that out the way, D'Amico is at a crossroads. Last season, we watched him do this same kind of disaster against the Cleveland Browns. And then they came back and they tore Cleveland ass up in the playoffs. D'Amico is going to have to make a serious decision about Bobby Slowick, man, because this Seth just said it. This hasn't been just a one-off or a four-game-off situation with this offense. This has been the entire season. And there's no reason to continue to believe that Bobby Slowick is going to be somebody that's going to get this thing righted, man, because it's all coming apart now with the way CJ is playing, because CJ is playing some of the worst football that I've seen. I never thought he was going to play like that, man. He's doing things that we thought that he would never do, taking sacks, running around, not throwing the ball away. He's doing things that we saw other quarterbacks do that we just lit up, like Will Levis, sorry ass. This is not something that is going to be sustainable. But I will continue to say this. If you are out here saying that you want D'Amico Ryans fired after he's taken us to the playoffs 2 years in a row, after that disaster that we experienced from 2020 to 2023, y'all ass is crazy. D'Amico is going to have to make some command decisions about his coaching staff and get some dudes over there that's going to fix his quarterback. But as far as him not being our head coach, y'all can miss me with that silly-ass stuff. Fellas, yesterday was embarrassing. It was something that the brand took a hit. I can tell you about what happened with that American flag that was supposed to be on the field that never happened, because they really pissed me off about having me come over there doing that. But other than that, we're going to be okay, because D'Amico Ryans is going to do what he has to do to make this franchise the winner that we're trying to be in our house.
Wait. What happened with the flag?
Man, we practiced from 1:15 to 3 o'clock, and we never made it onto the field because we had that 100-yard flag that we had to tote all the way from the bubble all the way over to the loading dock. And we get over there, and they told us we missed the entire performance of getting out on the field, man. And that flag was in the hallway, and they told us we had to unclip the flag and take it apart. I walked my ass right away from there and went to my seat to watch the game. They out their mind, man. The Houston Texans owe us a huge apology, man, because that walk from the bubble to the loading dock, man, with that flag, man. We had old ladies over there, man, trying to carry this flag, man. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen, and I never thought that would happen, because I was going to be right behind the Plantronics on the 50 holding the flag, man, and they messed me out of my moment, man. But you know what? That's why I say yesterday was just really a bad day for your boy, except for Beyonce.
I appreciate it.
I got a guess. That's the first I've heard of it, and it's not like some Everybody put down your torches. I'm guessing that this wasn't like some anti-American thing or anything, because they do this all the time where they have the full flag out on the field.
Maybe logistically.
I'm guessing logistically because of the Beyonce concert. Maybe it was...
There's a lot to navigate.
Or
yesterday.
Something with the Netflix production. Maybe there was a hitch in the schedule or something.
If I'm Larry and that's happening, I go get on my phone and I find a way to get on Ravens -5.5. I'm like, man, this just isn't going to be our day. We didn't get the flag on.
It was like one of those movies where like people are about to put on a big production and they think some talent scout's going to be in the audience, and it turns out that it's just they got the name wrong.
Oh,
it was, you know, we're ready for our big performance. Yeah. Like, oh, no, actually, you're not.
appreciate the phone call, Larry. All right, final segment coming up. We'll talk to the guys. Area 45 is in for In the Loop today. Patrick Creighton, Sean Bajani, we will pass the baton to them. Bowl game season is here, and up next, this is the first time we've seen Coach Prime in a bowl game. He's got one important instruction for all of his guys. You kids out there may want to heed this one, all right? We'll let you hear what it is coming up next.
Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you.
All right, Sean and I were discussing which recreational drugs we should get into. We're having a very mature conversation about maybe drugs are the answer.
Yeah.
Some you know, just a reasonable amount of heroin use. I don't know. Maybe that'll make me feel better.
Where do
I get heroin? Text in.
I had an important question. Yeah.
I wouldn't even know. I'd have no clue.
And trust me, we can't see your phone numbers or anything. Yeah. I asked you a very important question during the break. My wife got me these hoodies from, and I'm wearing
one. That's a nice hoodie.
Yeah. She got it from Flag and
Anthem. Good job, Amy.
Yeah. Yeah. She knows I like to shop on that website. And so it's a thin hoodie, got a nice design on it, but the sleeves are like down past the wrist. They're a little long, but it's because they have those little thumb holes in them.
Yeah.
That you stick your thumb in, and I see a lot of women walk around where they have shirts women do.
They're in their yoga, full yoga gear and everything.
Yeah, and so I asked you, if I put my thumbs in the holes like this and wear this hoodie like this.
Does it look like feminine?
Is it feminine? Yeah.
I don't think it is.
Okay.
But I think that, yeah, now that you bring it up, it feels like, you know, women like to have their hands warm.
Yeah.
A cup of coffee.
Yeah.
The way they put their hands on a cup of coffee.
Totally.
So maybe it's almost like a little half mitten for the lady folk.
Which,
and that where you're trying to do, like, you're trying to keep your hands warm.
I'm doing one of each right now. One with the thumb and one without the thumb.
You definitely look more like an adult without the thumb.
Yeah, I do. I think so, too.
The little hole there.
Okay.
But then it does, it probably looks like it's comfortable when you've got your thumb in the hole.
I kind of like having the thumb in the hole, too. You're right. It feels
like personal little shocker there.
Yeah.
I like that.
I was going to think it was more like a boxer.
Oh, like a boxer or that, too. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, if you're not watching on YouTube, you have no idea what the hell I'm talking about. Here's Deion Sanders, Coach Prime, going to a bowl game for the first time. Yeah, going to a bowl game for the first time. Probably would have been good for me to look up and see who they're playing in the bowl. That's how important bowl season is right now.
Yeah.
Colorado bowl game opponent is the University of Colorado. Oh, they're in the Alamo Bowl, the Valero Alamo Bowl against BYU. Ooh, BYU against Coach Prime. That's not bad. These are two teams that had playoff aspirations at various points during the year.
Yeah.
And what's funny about that is they're both in the Big 12. That's kind of weird. But at any rate, they didn't play each other this year, I don't think. Here was Coach Prime. The one thing, he gave his team all the instructions, the do's and don'ts of a bowl game. Or you're getting sent home. This was the one that got the most attention.
Last but not least, if I smell smoke on any floor, or if I get somebody that tells me somebody smoked it on that floor, that would be your last puff. Yeah. I'm just trying to tell you. It's going to be your last puff. That's going to be your last puff. I hope it was good, because that's going to be your last run. I promise you, if I smell smoke on your clothes at practice in the morning or at breakfast or anything, that's going to be your last time. I promise you, you will not embarrass us. When the last time? Who's been here? Where's the OBs at? Where's the OBs? When the last time y'all been in a bowl game?
Ever.
And you gonna let some fool mess it up?
Okay.
You know what reminds me of is the KC3, back when three Texans players were suspended for smoking a cigar type.
First report
a cigar
was
type, a
black
cigar.
And mild.
Yeah,
a
cigar type. Yeah, they were. Where logic would tell you they likely were not suspended for smoking.
Can you name those three players?
Jefferson,
Willie Jefferson from originally Baylor, and then I think
and
Sam.
The LSU defensive end Sam Montgomery, and then the third one was the running back from Notre Dame,
Sierre Wood,
yeah, who ended up getting in some serious legal stuff.
Serious,
like,
yeah,
he's like not even worth joking about.
He's in prison now.
Yeah. So good job, Deion.
That was during that season where
you got to follow through, though. It's like telling your kids you're going to turn that car around. Hey, as soon as you don't turn that car around, you're a fraud.
Yep.
They won't take your word. So now that's the big test. Does he actually follow through?
I definitely think he would. And I think there's a greater likelihood he follows through if it were one of his kids on the team doing it.
Yeah.
That's how serious I think Deion is. If he'd be most disappointed if Shiloh or Shadur were to be the ones token up.
You know what? I am glad if there's one thing, because, you know, obviously people are divided on the legalization of marijuana and everything. I think the one good thing ultimately that'll come out of it is that I think people are more willing or comfortable having realistic discussions about the drawbacks of any recreational substance. Whereas before, there was a lot of just like, nope, there's not a single thing wrong with it ever. Never. Nope. Nobody can ever have any problems. And you're like, okay, come on, dude. Like, I know, seven dudes from my high school who probably their life would have turned out differently if they'd put the bong down a little bit more often. So now I feel like you can have more conversations about responsible usage of recreational substances. The world has changed in a lot of ways, though.
It has. Now, I think what's funny about that audio, one, at the very beginning, if I smell smoke or somebody tells me that they smelled smoke, like, all right, okay, cool. He's farming some narcs. I like that.
Yeah.
Like, if somebody tells me they smell smoke, so he's like, all right, he's made it cool to narc.
He should have offered a cash reward. Except for, I don't know what the price tag is these days for these kids. They're making so much money.
Oh, I know. The NIL, man. If I smell it on your clothes, I tell you what, if there's one thing that you will have a hard time getting the smell out, it is weed.
Yeah.
So that's true. I like that when he was trying to illustrate, like, at the end, like, how long it's been since they've been in a bowl game. He's like, where are my OBs at? My OBs. That's got to be like, instead of OG, like original gangster, it's got to be like, what, original Buffalo, I'm assuming?
Oh, yeah.
His OBs.
Be. Yeah.
His OBs. I just like, my main thing I like is when he brought this up as a topic, that there was all sorts of chuckling going on in the room.
Yeah.
To the point where I like to think that some of the Buffalo players were looking at the guys who were most likely to get caught smoking weed. And a reminder that they live in a state where it's not only legal, it seems almost to be encouraged to smoke weed in Colorado.
I wonder...
as recreational as skiing or snowboarding.
Where's the thing about the Alamo Bowl that'll be different than other places? Like, if you played a game in San Francisco or like in where you're staying in New York City, there's a lot of cities nowadays when you walk down the streets, it's like it smells like a college dorm room.
Dude.
Like everywhere.
New York is incredible.
When we were up at Lopez's wedding, that was the first time it hit me.
Same.
I'm like, I got out of my car. I parked the rental car. I got out and I was like, oh my gosh. This is like I'm looking for the campus security to show up. And like, I'm like, what's going on?
Right, and like all the little like bodegas have been replaced by weed shops.
Yeah.
Dispensaries and whatnot.
So it's like it's obviously it's not like that here, even though you can do your deltas and whatnot. But yeah, the places where it's just people are smoking out in the open and everything. I don't know if you can keep the smell off your clothes in a lot of cities.
A lot of cities. Yeah, that's true. Probably a lot of it may have to do with where you're at, but San Antonio. Can't do it there.
It's not quite like that.
Can't do it there. Yeah. So good for Deion. Man, I've done a 180 on Coach Prime this season, man. I think he's, you know, I
you
was
have,
a big,
yeah,
I was
you
a big
have,
critique.
You totally have been. I've always, you know, and I think from the very beginning, I was very intrigued by Deion because I feel like people were underselling his actual coaching ability.
Yeah.
But that he also does bring a lot of, like, almost intentional mayhem with him just because of who he is and everything. And it was going to be the balancing act between those two worlds.
Yeah.
I think there are a lot of people that still discount or don't realize, like, how much actual football coaching he does.
Right.
You know, like, that's the part that's been cool to see that start to take hold.
There was none of me that ever thought he couldn't coach because he did a great job at Jackson State. That's not easy.
Yeah.
But what I was most skeptical of was the approach, leaning as heavy as he did into the transfer portal.
Yeah.
And especially along the offensive line and the defensive line, especially the offensive line, where it's a very much a chemistry position. Mm-hmm. The teams that typically succeed at the college level are the ones whose offensive lines have the most starts together through the 3 or 4 years. So that's the part I was really skeptical about, that just the approach he was taking would work, because he loved to wear on his sleeve, like, this is how I'm doing it.
Yeah.
I ain't focusing on the high school recruiting. I'm going all the way into the transfer portal. It worked. I give him and he's hired a really good staff too.
And a lot of his strategy too, in understanding, you know, in this changing landscape. Hey, wait a second. Like, high school recruiting does not matter nearly as much as it used to, because A, you have the transfer portal, but also B, like, okay, great. I've got a bunch of five stars. If they're not playing and starting in year one, they're transferring.
They're leaving.
So I'm not going to waste my time going to kowtow to 17-year-olds in their living rooms when, like, they might just be a one-year rental anyway.
Well, have you heard about this other rule that they've passed with the JUCOs?
Yeah.
Your JUCO years don't count against your eligibility anymore at the FBS level.
Dude, playing college football is going to become like a good thing to do in your entirety of your 20s.
You know, there are going to be guys who come away with their nest egg.
Yeah.
They're going to come away with millions and millions of dollars, but there's going to be plenty of, like, just mid-tier players that are going to enter adulthood not playing football,
yeah,
but with $500,000 in the bank.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I think that's great.
So the Ivy League is still trying to, like, be, like, you know, the bastion of keeping things amateur and everything. And it's not like those guys are going to get big NIL money or anything. But even some of the things that have changed in the Ivy League are, you know, you can get a redshirt year that doesn't count in the Ivy League, but it does count in the NCAA.
Yeah.
So, like, if you don't play your freshman year, like, the NCAA counts that as a red. So you're going to start to see even guys from that league that transfer and spend their fifth year at a big-time school or
yes,
something. Which ultimately will probably be good for schools like that, because you can still maybe get 4 years out of a guy, but he still has, like, a really good opportunity to showcase himself for the NFL,
yeah, man,
somewhere else.
Yeah, like an internship.
Like, he can get his degree at Harvard, but yeah, then go off and play big-time football somewhere.
Probably get a graduate degree, too. You know,
so,
like,
yeah, so they'll probably start giving them virtual red shirts there.
Yeah.
Because that's, like, so the kids in schools like that, because, so even the, like, a lot of schools like Stanford or something, there's an appeal still to the kids that go to those schools to get that degree. That helps you. That pays NIL money for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
It's unfair. It's stupid, but it's, I know I've benefited from that, like, going, like, you get a certain it's dumb.
Yeah.
But it's true. It works. It's a little bit of a passport into a lot of things.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, like, spend your 4 years there and then transfer to not Alabama anymore. You know, transfer to Texas or somewhere else for that fifth year.
Or Notre Dame.
Yeah.
By God. Yeah. So
some of those kids can get their degree at Notre Dame and then go off to a real football school. I've got my
hey,
Notre Dame degree, and now I'm going to go to a real football school.
1.5-point underdogs against Georgia in the Sugar Bowl next week.
We'll see how
right?
they do.
Yeah.
I've watched your team in the playoffs before, in the national championship.
Well, the national championship. So. That was the
Lou Holtz ain't walking through that door.
No, I know. He's busy making videos on his couch.
Lou Holtz would probably do really well in this era. I mean, that's what the whole problem with Notre Dame. Well, like, the thing that was different at Notre Dame was he was bringing in transfers,
dude,
and guys that didn't academically necessarily up to snuff. Everything.
Some of the videos he makes is him railing against the transfer portal and NIL.
Oh, if he were an active coach, he would be embracing
I don't
the
hell
know out
how
of it.
He would.
I think he'd be really good with it. Actually,
if he were to adapt, I think once he embraced it, I think he'd be great, because it still
sails. He rejected a lot of the old school sentiments of Notre Dame in his run at Notre Dame.
He did.
Yeah, I think he could have parted ways with some of his old school stuff.
Maybe. Yeah, we'll see. For now, we just got to settle for the videos he makes on his couch, giving opinions about a lot of things.
Hey, Patrick Creighton made a good point yesterday in the pregame to the pregame that I can't remember. I brought it up in the pregame.
It was, what was it about?
I don't know. Apparently it was tremendous, because none of us
it was a really good point. I'm so emotionally damaged and sleep deprived right now.
The Dalton Schultz catch against Tennessee.
What did I say? Oh, yeah,
week 15.
That Dalton Schultz. We missed that one. Where at the end of the year, Dalton Schultz just grabbed, like, wrestled the ball out of a defender's hand.
Oh, the Titans.
Yeah, in the Titans game. At the end of the season, like, we need that Dalton Schultz to show.
And then
he kind of delivered on it for at least one spectacular moment when CJ had kind of an errant throw, Dalton, Dalton kind of mossed
the dude
for it.
That was a throw that you were like, no, yes.
Yeah.
That looked like a
potential
sure
pick six. Yeah.
I'm like, who caught that? I'm like, Nico looks pale.
I've heard this from a lot of people in the fan base because they agreed with me after I said it. I'm at the point with Dalton Schultz where I kind of get angry when he does get a reception, because I'm like, nope, that doesn't undo everything else.
Right,
you don't deserve it. Yeah.
where has that been for 13 weeks?
Yeah.
All right, I don't think he's going anywhere, though.
Good question for you, Seth. if you got to play under these new rules,
yeah,
would you have done like 2 years at Cornell and then gone to Ohio State?
First, I would have to not get academically suspended in my fourth
year. True story.
No, I would have.
Right, so Michigan State, I would have gotten.
No. Well, not 2 years. I would have gotten my degree and then transferred. Yeah.
Taking a fifth year.
But, like, I played my freshman year, so it wouldn't apply to me.
Yeah.
But if you, like, if you don't play at all as a freshman, you get, like, a virtual red shirt.
Yeah.
And then after your 4 years there, even though the Ivy League won't give you the red shirt, you can go exercise it somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have totally done that. I almost transferred.
Yeah.
I was having a conversation with this about one of my old teammates the other day. This is what I did. I flirted with transferring. So my head coach is a guy named Jim Hoffer, who I didn't know much about what he had done before Cornell or anything, but he had been at Syracuse for a while. But I thought about transferring after my sophomore year. So I reached out to somebody I knew at Syracuse. Sent him my tape and everything. Talked to the defensive line coach. He liked me a lot. But word got back to Jim Hoffer, obviously, because he knew everybody up at Syracuse.
Before the internet.
Yeah, yeah.
And hey, who's this kid of yours who's sending us your stuff?
He guilt-tripped the hell out of me. He had me crying in his office about how selfish I was being and everything.